This is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Melissa Block with Great Expectations for 2006 and some small vignettes of the upcoming year to share with you today. In some corners, 2006 will call for the full Franklin. January 17th marks the 300th anniversary of Benjamin Franklin's birth, which means this will be a very busy year for Bill Meikle. He's been a Ben Franklin impersonator for the past 20 years.
The verb I use is that I Frankle.
Bill Meikle Frankles in and around Boston, which is where Ben Franklin was born in 1706 and where he learned his trade in his brother's print shop. Franklin left Puritan Boston when he was 17 and ended up in the more hospitable climes of Philadelphia. And while Philadelphia is going all out in celebrating the big Franklin year, Boston is not. Case in point, Boston's Museum of Science has opted for a Star Wars exhibit instead of a touring Franklin exhibition, all of which agitates Bill Meikle no end.
In Philadelphia, we got tons of money to celebrate Boston's most famous native-born son.
And I sense a tinge of resentment there that Ben Franklin, who was born in Boston, is maybe not getting the respect he deserves from his hometown.
Oh, not at all. Not at all. You know, I've talked to the powers that be over the course of the last few years, and they say, who?
Well, why do you figure that since Ben Franklin was born in Boston, spent 17 formative years there, that the city is just kind of snubbing him on the tercentennial of his birth?
Well, Boston is as Boston does, you know. It's just an attitude. Franklin left here. Probably they feel badly about that. Snubbed.
2006 could be a big year for Mike Moose Sanderson of New Zealand. He's the skipper of the yacht ABN Amro 1, which won the first leg of this year's Volvo Ocean Race. The race takes place every 4 years. It used to be called the Whitbread Round the World Race, 32,000 nautical miles over 8 months. And today, Mike Sanderson headed out on the second leg of the race from Cape Town, South Africa to Melbourne, Australia.
We're heading down into the Southern Ocean, so it'll be the first time this new generation of boats has gone down into the South. Obviously, what's tough about the Southern Ocean is the roaring 40s and the screaming 50s of the winds, and also, of course, icebergs and big waves. You know, it's generally the wildest part of the world.
You said the roaring 40s and screaming 50s?
Yeah, I mean, it's just sort of a nickname which is often given to the latitudes down there. We could get as low as 60 in the leg out of Melbourne. So, you know, we're definitely down at the bottom of the earth, that's for sure.
Is there a moment when you're on the boat and despite all the things you need to do to keep going and keep on course, you can just appreciate where you are and what you're seeing?
Yeah, I mean, for sure, you know, you get down in the South and suddenly realize you are, you know, you're down there with the albatross and the whales, and, you know, it's quite clear that you're in someone else's playground, if you like. You might have a 14-foot wingspan albatross cruising around beside you, but, you know, we're there for the competition. It's like asking a Formula One racer as they enjoy being at Monaco for the Grand Prix, you know. Yes, it's lovely, but it's just where the race happens to take us.
Mike Sanderson should be sailing across the finish line in Gothenburg, Sweden, this June, right around the time that soccer fans are rejoicing in another every 4 year event, the finals of the World Cup. And for the first time ever, the tiny island nation of Trinidad and Tobago has made the finals. The Soca Warriors are going to the World Cup. That's huge news for Trinidadians like Rudy Harrigan. He'll be among those glued to the games at his nightclub Eclipse in Queens, New York.
Everybody is excited. The talk of the town right now, it's about the World Cup and Germany and who's going to go and who's going to stay. And a lot of people think, you know, if they stay in New York, they could have a better time at Eclipse, because in here we have approximately about 5 televisions. And we also have, like, the rhythm section where they beat, like, the steel pan and the iron and the drums.
So they'll be playing during the game.
Yeah, they play on and off, you know, like even if you go like to the Yankees game and you hear, you know, like it's a little music for the excitement.
I've read that Trinidad is the smallest country ever to make it to the World Cup finals.
Yes, we were trying for years, and it's the first time we ever qualified. they call the Trinidad team the Warriors. And the Warriors, you know, like, they make up the mind, you know, they said they will put the, you know, like, 110% to win. They will go all out.
One more thing to keep on your mental radar screen for 2006. You may have forgotten that this year marks the 200th anniversary of the Southwestern Expedition of Zebulon Montgomery Pike. He left St. Louis on July 15, 1806. Now, I confess, a week ago, I couldn't have told you a thing about Zebulon Pike, but I got a refresher course from Matt Mayberry. He's director of the Colorado Springs Museum, which is devoting a whole year to educating ignorant people, like me, about Zebulon Pike.
Everybody, at least locally, can say two things about Zebulon Pike, and that is that Pike's Peak is named for him. That's kind of a gimme. The other thing is that he didn't climb to the top of Pike's Peak, and that's about it. It's a name that has been largely lost to history, sadly. He was exploring the West, exploring the frontier at the same time as Lewis and Clark, but his memory has just faded over time.
Well, now that I've been had the chance to read up a little bit on him, you say he was sort of doing the same things as Lewis and Clark. He seems to have been sort of their hapless step-sibling, just sort of not succeeding in anything he tried.
My favorite one-sentence description of Zebulon Pike comes from Donald Jackson, who was a historian writing in the 1960s. His statement is something to the effect of, "Nothing Pike tried to do was easy and most of his luck was bad." And I mean, what a terrible epitaph to have on your grave.
Yeah. And
one of the things we're trying to do is to get past this idea that he was somehow incompetent as a Western explorer. He came into a region using maps that were completely inaccurate. His mission was to travel some 800 miles and back into the wilderness and to return by the time snow fell. So his task itself was almost impossible and nearly set him up for failure from the day he left St. Louis in July of 1806.
Well, you know, we think we may have discovered the soundtrack for your bicentennial year, thanks
Great.
To the miracles of Google. The band Zebulon Pike,
yes.
Is going to be back after a long injury-induced layoff. Their website describes their music as doom-laden, instrumental stoner metal, and the soundtrack to the slow-motion apocalypse. Does that work for you, Matt?
That's very enjoyable.
Matt Mayberry of the Colorado Springs Museum, who will be spending 2006 giving Zebulon Pike his historical due. We also heard from Rudy Harrigan, owner of the Eclipse Nightclub in Queens, New York, Mike Sanderson, skipper of the yacht ABN Amro 1, and Ben Franklin impersonator Bill Meikle, all with their preoccupations for the year 2006. You're listening to All Things Considered from NPR News.